This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Welcome back to Faherty Up Close from a Distance. My guest today is a familiar face on the PGA Tour. He's the big fella who has Samoan heritage from Salt Lake City, Tony Finau. Tony, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you, David?
I'm doing great. You seem to be in a quiet room in your house, and that I would say that's an achievement in the Finau household.
My quiet space for the whole time I've been home. To you know, my kids are a lot of fun, but sometimes they drive me crazy. So I gotta find this quiet aroma every now and again.
Yeah. Well, are you driving a line of Berserk? Just you being home all the time?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I think she's looking forward to the PGA Tour resuming so I can get back out on the road.
Yeah, aren't we all?
Yeah.
Well, what are you doing to pass the time, you know, during this period?
Yeah, man, a lot of eating, a lot of TV watching, and a lot of working out. It seems like those are kind of the three things I'm doing the most of. And then just trying to be a teacher to my kids. You know, they've announced – I'm in Arizona, and they've announced that, you know, they're pretty much done with school for this school year. So they're doing homeschool, which means I got to play teacher my wife and I have to play teacher. So we've been trying to get on a schedule with the kids and doing that. I've been cooking a lot. So a lot going on at home, but I would say those are the main things.
Yeah. You're ready to break out, I'm sure. if it weren't for Netflix in this household, I'd have my head in the toilet.
Oh, Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, we're bouncing around to all of them. Yep.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, speaking of television, on Golf Channel, we've been airing a couple of events from the past that are particularly interesting to you. First of all, the Big Break. What did the Big Break mean to you in your career?
Well, first of all, it was so fun to play. It was so fun to be a part of with my brother. We were really young. We were young pros at the time, and just trying to make it in the golf world, and to be able to have that experience with my brother was a lot of fun. But I really got a glimpse into reality TV and how they shoot reality TV and being around cameras and under a lot of pressure. You know, the thing I learned about Big Break, especially pertaining to my golf career, was a lot was riding on one shot. It was quite different than regular golf. There was so much pressure. I still don't know if I've dealt with as much pressure on Big Break than really any other golf tournament I've ever played in the world.
Really?
Even up to this day, just because in golf, we have a chance to recover. If I hit a bad tee shot, you know, I've learned how to recover because I've hit a lot of bad tee shots in my time.
Yeah.
But on Big Break, sometimes, you know, we'd have a competition where they draw a line down the middle of the fairway, and whoever's closest to the line is safe, and the guy furthest from the line is eliminated. You know, you'll tense up pretty fast thinking about it. So I learned a lot about myself throughout that show and how I deal with pressure situations and being around cameras. So that was a great experience for my brother and I.
I read somewhere that that you didn't have enough clothing at that stage, you know, to complete the event.
Well, I had to borrow some of my friend's clothes to be there at Big Break. So that was quite the time for me.
Yeah, you're a big guy. Was he the same size as you?
Yeah, he was. He's huge. So well, he's actually a little bigger than me. So that's the only reason why I reached out to him to give him some clothes.
Well, that was fortunate for you. You know, you're 16th in the world at the minute, and yet, you know, you learned to play golf in a poor neighborhood, in your garage, hitting into a mattress. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so come from very humble beginnings. My dad got us involved in the game, and my younger brother started playing at a super young age. And when my brother decided that he wanted to play, my dad was all in, but he didn't know anything about the game. He went to the nearest golf course, and he recognized that the game wasn't very cheap, and it was a very expensive game. For a bucket of balls at the time was $7 at our home golf course. And he knew there's no way he was going to be paying $7 a day for us to practice golf. So he figured out a way for us to practice. And he also learned that the chipping green and the putting green was free. It was like a park, a city park. So we learned how to chip and putt at the golf course. We would go to the golf course and chip and putt. And since it was free, and my dad put up had this idea of putting up a mattress in our garage for us to learn how to swing a golf club and hit, so we could learn how to practice the full swing in our garage. So that's how we learned how to play the game. And once a week, we would get out and see the ball fly. My dad would spend $7 once a week for us to just see the golf ball fly. But for the most part, most of the swings I made from the time I started at 8 years old till 12 years old was indoor.
Your dad's a great character, and we see him fairly frequently out there on yeah. tour with you. I know a bit more about your dad than I do your mom. What was mom doing at the time you were whanking balls into the mattress?
Well, she was an amazing supporter, you know, and just kind of, I think, followed my dad's lead. But I know she was a big advocate for playing different sports outside of the main sports we do as Polynesians. And you know, just in general, you know, I still think golf is not as mainstream as basketball and baseball and football and those types of things.
Or rugby.
Or rugby, exactly, especially in Polynesia.
Yeah.
But, you know, she was a big advocate for us doing something different. And both of my parents were all in when we decided that we wanted to golf. And so she was super supportive and all of this. But she, you know, she at first, you know, thought my dad was pretty crazy that he could teach us a game that he had no clue about.
Well, the second thing that has been airing with you heavily involved the last couple of years was the Masters. What are your recollections from last year? And was it like Groundhog Day watching it again, or have you been watching?
You know, I haven't watched it. I look at it probably a little different than most, and then obviously Tiger. You know, it was a lot of fun to be a part of, first of all, and an experience that I'll never forget. And that's a fact. You know, 100%. I enjoyed the moment. But as a competitor, I knew I was playing some good golf. I had a great chance to win a green jacket, and unfortunately, it didn't happen. So a little bit salty about the final result. But I was so excited to be able to witness that firsthand. On the 18th green, and you know, walking off the 18th hole last year, I could remember when I knew I wasn't going to win. I can remember how excited I was for the game of golf, that Tiger was back, and that the game was going to continue to grow off his shoulders. You know, he's done so much for the game. I wouldn't be playing golf if it wasn't for the 1997 Masters. I started playing golf in the summer of '97, and I was watching this guy in red and black. I was, you know, hearing Jim Nantz's voice. You know, them talking about this Augusta National and the Masters, it looked so cool to me. And so finally having that opportunity to play in 2018 and then having a chance in 2019 to win a green jacket, walking with Tiger, it was all, I look back now and it almost seems like it was all a dream, but it was a lot of fun to be a part of. And I was happy for Tiger. Again, once I knew that I wasn't going to win, I was truly excited for Tiger.
You really had a chance, for sure. Obviously, there was 12 where, I mean, that was a disaster area for not just you, but 15, you had a putt for eagle that would have got you within one.
Yeah, that's really the one shot I would take back. I didn't really hit a bad shot on 12. I barely pushed it, and it went in, you know, fell just about a yard short of the green and went in the water. 15 is the putt that I'd like to have back. I don't know if that would have changed the outcome, but I would have had some pressure on him playing with him, and I would have had the tee on 16 and not him. So, you know, obviously his shot on 16, I think will go down as one of the greatest shots in history. And that to me really sealed the deal for him. He had a nice little cushion with two holes to play. But if I could have made that putt, I would have had the tee on 16. And if I would have stuck it close, who knows, you know, how the results would have been different. But unfortunately didn't make it. And again, was able to watch Tiger finish it off.
You've played so much great golf over the last 3 or 4 years, and you were one of the Americans, one of the very few Americans who played particularly well at the Ryder Cup the last time. How important is it for you to make that team again?
Yeah, extremely important, and more so important because I was there watching when Rory and Justin Rose and all the guys were celebrating in front of us in Paris. and that's a feeling I won't forget, because we were on the losing side of that of that team. And so more so as a competitor, I want to get back on that team so we could be on the winning side and be celebrating on 18 instead of on the losing side of it. So a lot of motivation to make this 2020 team, and one that, you know, once you're a part of those teams, you don't want to miss one when you're in the peak of your career. And I feel like that's me at this point. You know, I'm very motivated to make this team in 2020.
Yeah, that's for sure. I only played in one of them, and again, it was a losing team, but it was still one of the high points of my career, just being on that side.
No question. And being a part of that team for me still might be the highlight of my career, no matter what. I could say I was on the same team as Tiger and Phil, two guys who will go down as some of the best players to ever play the game in the history of golf. And to be able to put my name just in the same team as them, as, you know, two guys that, again, have carried our flag in the golf world for a long time. You know, I played on the same team as them. I don't know a lot of guys in our era that will be able to say that same thing.
You were on the golf course at the Players when it was called, and this twilight zone that we're in began. Talk me through just how that felt at that time. From a broadcasting standpoint, for me, it was just, you know, like, what? I mean, really, it just unheard of.
You can't explain it any better. It's such a strange time. Like you said, we're in the twilight zone. It's such a weird time. There's no other wording for it other than just, it's been super strange and super weird. But all I remember at the time was I was pretty dumbfounded. I didn't know what to think, what to say. I didn't know how serious this pandemic was. I felt like, you know, we took the necessary cautions to do that. But again, how serious it was going to be. There's so many uncertainties at the time, I think. And so I think I was just like everybody else. I didn't really know what to think, but I did agree that was the best call at the time. Just seeing that all sports around us were coming to a close. That was the call to make. But it was a weird thing that we had to start and then ended the tournament early.
The game generates so much for really worthy causes throughout the United States, and you've been a big part of that. Your foundation has donated more than 30,000 meals, I believe, to first responders. Tell me a little bit about that program.
Yeah, so we teamed up with this for the kids program in Utah, and we've made some monetary donations to them to help feed the kids that we feel like are in the areas that need it, especially during this time. There's so many worthy causes, and that's one that we're involved in. And we're also involved in one with Intermountain Healthcare as a foundation, where they're providing and making masks, gowns, and face shields for those on the front lines that are working. And the true heroes, I feel like, of this whole pandemic, which are the medical staff and those working to save lives, truly, truly save lives. So we're involved in both of those causes, and you know, not doing it for the recognition, but just truly started a foundation to help others and to inspire others to try and be better and do better and help families that need it. So it's been a crazy time, but I think as a humanity and as humankind, we've all truly come together to help each other. And I've been inspired by so many other athletes, so many other actors, and just so many others. You know, you don't have to be you don't have to be popular or anything to have a skin in the game here. And that's the great thing about this pandemic, is I truly believe it's helped all of us come together and truly understand that we all have a place in this world to give back to others.
You know, we as Americans get given a hard time around the world, you know, for various things. But being an immigrant here, I can tell you that it's the kindest nation on earth. And, you know, thank you for being a part of what you're doing. It makes a big difference. Let's do a little rapid fire here with Tony. Or Milton Pienaar. Not a lot of people know that. That's, I would have thought Anthony.
In Tongan, it's Miritoni.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's where Tony comes from. So there you go.
Okay. All right. Well, rapid fire. How many times have you heard dad in the last 3 weeks?
Oh, thousands, soon to be millions, I'm sure.
Four of the little ankle biters you've got there.
That's right.
You grew up in Utah around world-class skiing. Did you ever think about becoming a skier?
I've never skied in my life, so. Yeah, never skied in my life. Snowboarded a few times, but yeah, no, so.
What is your favorite Samoan meal?
Ooh, pani popo.
Ooh, what is that?
It's basically baked rolls with sweet coconut milk over the top.
Ooh,
that's right. It's a dessert, it's amazing.
Okay. Who's your favorite Utah Jazz player of all time?
Oh, Karl Malone, the mailman.
The mailman?
Yeah.
Are you wearing pants right now?
I'm not, I'm wearing shorts, workout shorts.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, yeah, that's fine. As long as you're wearing something below the waist, that's fine. Tony, thank you so much. I hope you get back into the routine of playing golf for a living again. We're looking forward to seeing you back in action. Thanks for joining me today and spend a little time on
Fairway. Yeah, of course.
From a distance.
Thanks, Dave. Great buddy. Being with you.
We'll see you.
Stay safe.
Thanks for joining me, Faherty fans. You can find more of the Faherty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Faherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Faherty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.